Join the National U Institute for our Foundations of Freedom Regional Seminars in California. We're stopping in Newport Beach on April 30th and then in San Jose on May 1st. These half-day conferences take place from 2:30 to 6:30 p.m. and feature me, Rich Lowry, and Ramesh Panuru, along with Judge Janice Rogers Brown, John Yu of Berkeley Law, and Will Swaim of the California Policy Center. Register at nrinstitute.org. That's nrinstitute.org. Hope to see you there.
Welcome to the Great Books Podcast. Today we'll talk about The Last Man by Mary Shelley. I'm your host, John J. Miller of National Review, and you're listening to a production of National Review. Our guest is Eileen Hunt, a professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame. She's the author of Artificial Life After Frankenstein, as well as Mary Shelley and the Rights of the Child. Her brand new book, just out from the University of Pennsylvania Press, is The First Last Man, Mary Shelley and the Post-Apocalyptic Imagination. She joins us by Zoom as we record from Hillsdale College's campus radio station, WRFH in Michigan. Eileen, welcome to the Great Books Podcast.
Thank you so much. It's such a great honor to be part of this podcast and to be being interviewed by the National Review that I read since I was a child because my father was a subscriber.
Well, thanks so much, Eileen. Now tell us, why is The Last Man by Mary Shelley a great book?
It's a great book for many reasons, but let me just give you three. First, Mary Shelley, amazingly, after she wrote Frankenstein, goes on to write the first modern post-apocalyptic pandemic novel, published in 1826. So she publishes Frankenstein, often described as one of the first major works of modern science fiction, or what I tend to call political science fiction. She publishes Frankenstein in 1818, when she is just on the cusp of 20 years old. And then just a mere 8 years later, she goes on to publish arguably the second most important and influential work of political science fiction and post-apocalyptic literature since. Secondly, it's a great work of literature because it's rooted in the classics of the Western tradition. It's rooted in the Bible. It's rooted in classic works of Greek tragedy, such as Oedipus Rex. It's rooted in the classics of the Roman tradition, including Ovid and Virgil. And it's also rooted in the classics of modern literature, including Daniel Defoe, Journal of the Plague Year. Mary Shelley took these sources from both the ancient tradition as well as the modern literary tradition. And she created arguably a whole new genre that we now recognize is absolutely central to science fiction. And that is what I call post-apocalyptic literature in this book. The third reason it's a great work of literature is what it means for us now. As survivors of COVID-19, as survivors of a massive and deadly pandemic, we can relate to the existential truths of this novel. This is a deeply philosophical and profound novel that I argue goes on to influence some of the classics of existential and dystopian literature after it. And this is a novel that feels immediate and real to us today.
We're going to talk about all that, the story and the characters, what this book says about plagues and pandemics, how it connects to other works in the genre of science fiction and the legacy of Mary Shelley, plus a lot more. Eileen, let's start with how The Last Man begins. There's a framing narrative, an author's introduction, it's called, in which Mary Shelley supposedly travels to Naples and then to the Sibyl's Cave, where she discovers a manuscript, which is this novel from the future. What's going on here?
It's an amazingly complex frame narrative that undergirds the whole story of The Last Man. And in fact, as the esteemed romanticist Morton Paley argued in his introduction to the Oxford World Classics edition of The Last Man in 1994, Mary Shelley bases the introduction to The Last Man on her own life experience. in 1818, very soon after the publication of Frankenstein in January of that year, she and her husband, the very controversial and radical poet Percy Bysshe Shelley, decided to move to Italy with their children, William and Clara, who were just babies, just toddlers at the time. They moved to Italy that spring. And in December of that year, December of 1818, Mary Shelley visited Naples and visited the cave of the Sibyl of Baiae with Percy and her stepsister, Claire Claremont. And she recorded that visit to the cave of the Sibyl of Baiae in her journal. This visit was significant for personal reasons as well as for literary reasons.
So what were the personal reasons?
Mary Shelley and Percy Shelley tragically lost their baby, Clara, at about her first birthday from dysentery and fever in September of that year. So almost as soon as they moved to Italy, they lose their second child. Their first child died about 2 weeks after she was born prematurely when Mary Shelley was just 17 years old. So this was their second experience of the tragedy of child loss. So their trip to Naples, I believe, in late 1818 was very much an attempt of the couple to rebuild their marriage and their relationship and get in touch with the things they truly cared about. And they both deeply cared about classical literature, both Greek and Latin. As you and your listeners probably know, this region of Italy and Naples has many rich archaeological sites. And they visited Pompeii. They visited this cave where the Cumaean Sibyl, the ancient Cumaean Sibyl, was said to have resided and was said to have delivered prophecies via the writing of those prophecies on scraps of leaves of oak trees. And Mary Shelley was quite struck by this image of this female Sibyl living in a cave, delivering her prophecies through scraps of paper, scraps of manuscripts that other people had to piece together and find meaning from. So if we imagine the young Mary Shelley here in 1818, about 21 years old at this point, already having lost two children at this point, and we imagine her emotional state visiting this cave near Naples, we can see the ways in which Mary Shelley identified with the figure of the prophetess, the ancient prophetess. Mary Shelley was devoutly religious. This is a little known fact. She's often confused with the attitudes of her husband, Percy Bysshe Shelley, who is, of course, a famous atheist. He was kicked out of Oxford for being an atheist. Mary Shelley was, by contrast, profoundly religious. And she may have been aware that the Cumaean Sibyl was interpreted by later Christian thinkers as a prophet of the coming of Christ. So I think there's a religious dimension to Mary Shelley's use of the figure of the Sibyl to frame the entire narrative of The Last Man. If we look at her introduction, she alludes to the journey of herself, Percy, and her stepsister Claire to this exact cave. So she makes the novel personal from the beginning. So what she's doing is she's setting up the novel as an allegory for her own life, especially her life with Percy, who dies young. He drowned in July 1822 off the coast of Tuscany. This novel, Mary Shelley's The Last Man, was in many ways a product of her grief over the loss of Percy and their children. And she wrote the novel basically between, say, early 1823 and the summer of 1825. And it was published in January 1826. This deeply personal novel, rooted in her own experiences of tragic loss of family and children, grows out of this experience, I think a kind of spiritual experience, where she visited this cave and she identified with the figure of the prophetess. And she sees herself as a writer, as a woman writer, as creating a prophecy of the future, a philosophy of the future, even. And in this novel, she imagines herself as a survivor, as a last man, the person left behind after the loss of everyone that she loved and admired. In the novel, it seems that the whole earthly population of humans has been wiped out, except this one narrator, Lionel Verney.
And so after the author's introduction, we go into the actual novel of The Last Man, this manuscript that Mary Shelley supposedly extracts from the cave. And we meet the last man, who is Lionel Verney. Who is Lionel Verney and what story does he tell?
Lionel Verney has been interpreted as the avatar for Mary Shelley since the birth of modern scholarship on this novel in the 1920s and 1930s. Mary Shelley herself wrote to friends soon after the publication of The Last Man in 1826 and effectively said the same thing, that the novel was a Romana Clef. It was an allegory for her own life, especially her life with Percy and their friends, such as Lord Byron. So Lionel Verney is Mary Shelley, which is a very interesting authorial move on her part. So she not only identifies with the figure of the prophetess in the cave of the Sibyl of Baiae, she ultimately identifies with this narrator who is a man. And he's a very interesting man because he is a survivor of a global plague, and he's retrospectively narrating the story of how it seems all of humanity has been wiped out by this plague except him. Lionel Verney has the role of a curator, author figure in this novel, where he is effectively giving us the story of the end of humanity. But in some sense, he's also a curator figure who gives us hope for how we might move forward when we are faced with the sense of total destruction and loss.
When the novel begins, he's not the last man. There are, in fact, many other people populating the world. The world is full of people. But then comes the plague. What does Mary Shelley say about the plague? It, of course, feels so timely to us with the pandemic having just ravaged our own world. But what does Mary Shelley say about the plague in The Last Man?
She's quite ambiguous about what the plague is. And I think that's deliberate on her part, because ultimately for her, plague is a metaphor. Plague is, it can be read on multiple levels. It can be read literally as a disease, but it can also be read figuratively as a concatenation of human-made tragedies. And so in the novel itself, she sometimes suggests that the novel, that the plague is communicated through person-to-person contact. Other times she suggests that it's communicated through the air. And so she clearly read a lot about epidemiology of the time period. She knew different theories of disease transmission, but she leaves it ambiguous in the novel exactly what is the cause of the spread of the plague. In my reading of the novel, I emphasize that the plague rises during a war between Greece and Turkey, and it seems to rise out of the battlefield itself. And it is spread as a result of the conflicts of the war, but also the deeper interpersonal conflicts that drive the novel from the very beginning. Because as you point out, when Lionel Verney starts to narrate the story of The Last Man, he's not last yet. He's surrounded by people, and those relationships are in many ways generate the conflicts that then lead to the war and the spread of the plague all over the globe.
One of the points she seems to make about the plague is that maybe it has a natural origin, but then its spread is at least partly man-made.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think Mary Shelley, as in Frankenstein, is pushing us to philosophically engage with the question of what is natural and what is artificial. How much do human beings shape their own environment? To what degree are we the agents of the change of our environment? Even, say, a seemingly natural disaster, such as a plague. Could we come to understand ourselves as at least partially responsible, if not wholly responsible in the end, for the way that it moves around and shapes our world? And I think in this way, Mary Shelley was quite prescient as a political theorist. She was the daughter of two political philosophers, William Godwin and Mary Wollstonecraft, two of the greatest Enlightenment political theorists. And from them, she did learn a lot about Enlightenment political philosophy, including the thought of Rousseau. And like Rousseau, Mary Shelley was interested in this question of to what extent human beings bring evil into the world through their social interactions. I think this novel is an allegory for that very philosophical problem, the ways in which human beings ultimately shape nature itself through their social relationships. And in many ways, we often bring about evil and disaster through our social interactions and their impact on the environment around us.
So this is a political novel in so many ways. Does it contain a warning?
That's a great question. Does it contain a warning for us, especially in the wake of COVID-19? I think in many ways it was read that way in 2020. I was part of that group of writers and readers who look back to Mary Shelley as a source of inspiration, as a source of hope in the wake of COVID. I think at the end of the day, Mary Shelley is more of a beacon of hope for us than she is a source of doom and gloom. That is a reading of the novel that may seem counterintuitive, but when we move towards an analysis of the ending of the novel, I think Mary Shelley is more a beacon of hope for us today than she is simply a prophet of doom or a philosopher who is simply warning us of evils that may afflict us. I think, like the figure of the Cumaean Sibyl, Mary Shelley is giving us scraps of hope and vision, which we can choose to piece together to give meaning to our lives in the face of disaster going forward.
There's a lot of death in this book, as you would expect for what is a post-apocalyptic novel that involves a plague and so forth. There's an awful lot of death in this book. But as you say, it ends on a note of optimism. How do we get to the optimism and the sense of hope that comes at the very end of the book?
Well, my own theory is that after Percy Shelley died in 1822, in July of that year, in a sailing accident, Mary Shelley, utterly devastated. That was a shocking and devastating loss. And as I said, they'd already suffered serial losses of their own children. Their son, William, went on to die of malaria in Rome in the spring of 1819. Mary Shelley had a miscarriage about a month before Percy died. It was quite late term. She nearly died of bleeding. And if Percy Shelley hadn't acted quickly and found ice to stop the bleeding, Mary Shelley might have died then. As a couple, as a family, they had so much tragedy and so much loss. My own sense is Mary Shelley used the process of writing about these losses in her journal to then develop the story of The Last Man and to think of it as an allegory, not only for her own family's losses, but the problem of human loss in general. All human beings face loss, face death, face tragedy over the course of their lifetimes. And this novel is brave in the way it confronts that existential fact of the human lifespan, that all of us confront death, all of us confront tragedy. Mary Shelley was deeply attuned with that fact, and she was brave as a writer to give us a story on which we as readers must confront that fact. We can't escape that fact. In some ways, you could read The Last Man as kind of a very early form of kind of proto-Victorian realism, which we tend to associate with Charles Dickens, for example. Because this novel, in charting the absolute devastation of death, the way death can't in the end be resisted for we mortal beings, she's forcing us to be in touch with reality itself. I've taught this novel several times at Notre Dame the last few years since the pandemic. And what I found is students don't find the death and destruction to be morally devastating. They don't find this to be a hopeless novel. What they find it to be is a deeply gripping existential and realistic novel that pushes us towards the question, what do we do after disaster? And so in that way, it forces us to look ahead into the future and in some sense to prophesize our own futures and to have hope that there is a future. And that, I think, is where that is where the hope in the novel lies, that even after the confrontation of death on a massive scale, human beings have this ability to have hope in a future that lies beyond that destruction.
And that's where Lionel Verney finds himself at the end of the novel. He's the last man, he thinks, but he's going to go looking for other people, right? There's this sense that he can search, he can wander, and maybe something good will happen.
This section of the novel, I believe Mary Shelley may have conceived of first. We know when she wrote Frankenstein, she was initially possessed by this nightmarish vision of a scientist hovering over a dead body and bringing it to life. That was her original vision of the novel. For those of you familiar with Frankenstein, you know that's about chapter 4 of the actual novel. So she started in the center of the novel and worked out. I think when she wrote The Last Man, she was actually struck by the final vision of the novel, this prophetic vision of a last man looking out onto the world from atop St. Peter's in Rome. And looking out across the ruins of human civilization and believing there must be someone else out there, at least somebody else. Somebody else had to have survived. And then he embarks on a ship at the very end of the story and goes out in search of those survivors. He brings as his only companions the works of Homer and Shakespeare and his mutt, who he has adopted. And Verney is seen last sailing out, probably out to the coast of Africa in search of those other people who he hypothesizes must be out there waiting to be found.
I love that at the end of the book, he still has his dog traveling with him.
That's right. That's right. Well, in that way, I think a lot of the recent scholarship that's emphasized the ecological themes of The Last Man is really pertinent. Because at the end of the day, Lionel Verney seems to be the only human survivor, but there are other life forms out there. Other animals are still wandering around ruins of Italy. So he adopts a pet. And that's part of his process, I think, of discerning a hopeful future where he might find other humans, too, down the line. But even if he didn't, I think what is truly hopeful about Lionel Verney's response to the disaster of the global plague is that he at the very least knows that the meaning of life is found in companionship. Whether that companionship and love is found in our relationships with other animals or with human animals, or if we find it simply in books, in literally the remains of human civilization itself. You have to find companionship with someone or something in the world in order to make your life meaningful.
We spent some time talking about what genre of work this is. Is it science fiction? Is it post-apocalyptic literature? Of course, it's both. It's also plague literature, as you mentioned at the start of the show. And there's a great tradition of plague literature that includes Oedipus Rex, A Journal of the Plague Year by Daniel Defoe, The Plague by Albert Camus, all of which we've discussed in this podcast series already.
Oh, wonderful.
But Eileen, tell us, what is plague literature and where does this book fit into that tradition, which you write about in your new book, The First Last Man, Mary Shelley and the Post-Apocalyptic Imagination?
Well, that was one of the guiding questions of this book. This book actually arose in some ways out of my previous books on Mary Shelley, in which I engaged the last man. But this book also arose out of my experience of COVID-19. And in February 2020, as we were getting closer to COVID-19 being recognized by the World Health Organization as a pandemic, I wrote an op-ed published in the New York Times about the relevance of The Last Man to what we were facing. And so that's what inspired me to begin to think about this novel as a work of plague literature. What did it mean to read The Last Man in the context of plague literature, going back to the Bible and the Greek and Roman tradition, and then extending through modern classics by Defoe, Camus, and so on. This literary quest of mine to try and contextualize Mary Shelley's The Last Man within plague literature proved to be quite a journey. I've been teaching on that topic for several years now. What I have come to understand plague literature as through that journey, plague literature is not only about the spread of disease. It's not, it often is quite literally about the struggles human beings face with respect to the spread of disease. And whether that's airborne or person-to-person contact, or whether that's the bubonic plague or that's malaria, plague literature often engages plague quite literally as a disease. But I think on a deeper level, plague literature is about using plague in whatever form as a metaphor for the inevitable sorrows, tragedies, sufferings, experiences of human-made or human-instigated or exacerbated destruction that we all face. I think Mary Shelley understood plague as this gigantic metaphor for everything that ails the human condition. And in this way, she was building on the Bible. She was building on the Greek and Roman traditions in which plague is a central metaphor for human hardship.
George Orwell did not write plague literature. He wrote about sickness, but I wouldn't say he wrote into the plague literature tradition. But I think of George Orwell when I think of The Last Man, because a working title of 1984, which is a kind of post-apocalyptic novel, was The Last Man in Europe. So, Eileen, what's the connection between Mary Shelley, George Orwell, and these books?
That was one of the most exciting discoveries I was able to make in the process of researching this book, both its sources and its legacies. As you point out, we wouldn't think of Orwell as indebted to plague literature in particular, especially if we read plague literature quite literally as about disease. But if we read plague literature more metaphorically, then I think we can read Orwell as indebted to this tradition that goes back to Mary Shelley. And I was able to show that Orwell very likely read The Last Man, but I was definitively able to show that George Orwell certainly was aware of Mary Shelley's journals, because he reviewed an edition of English diaries of the 19th century around the time he was writing 1984. And in this review, which was positive, he actually singled out Mary Shelley's journal entry from her Journal of Sorrow, which she began after Percy died in 1822. And this is the journal that I argue is the autobiographical basis for The Last Man. He singled out an entry in which she compared herself to the figure of the last man. Some of that same language from her journal shows up in the torture scene in 1984, where Winston Smith is described as the last man by his torturer, O'Brien. And so Mary Shelley was most definitely an influence on Orwell, both her Journal of Sorrow as well as the novel The Last Man. Orwell also was a huge fan of H.G. Wells, who was definitely influenced by Mary Shelley's The Last Man. There's a reference to The Last Man at the end of War of the Worlds, for example. Orwell was also a huge fan of M.P. Scheele, who was the first author to adapt the storyline of The Last Man in a novel after Mary Shelley. That novel is The Purple Cloud, published in 1901. So there are many avenues through which Orwell could have been influenced by Mary Shelley, and I was able to establish possibly the most direct way in which he could have been influenced by Mary Shelley, which was through her journals, in which she first conceptualized the concept of The Last Man. What I think they share in common is this concern with plague more as a metaphor. So in 1984, I think the plague is mind control. The plague is the way the authoritarian, totalitarian state exerts mind control over people through technology such as the telescreens.
Let's wrap up with a couple of questions about Mary Shelley and where this book fits in her legacy. She's super famous for Frankenstein, one of the most important novels in the English language, and many people read it. But then many people stop reading Mary Shelley. They start and stop with Frankenstein. If you read a second book by Mary Shelley, this is usually it, but very few people have read this book. And its critical legacy is kind of mixed. The novel was reviewed poorly at the time of its publication, but now it's coming back. And Eileen, you're part of the movement to bring it back, especially with your new book, The First Last Man. Why did it vanish? And why are scholars giving it a new look now?
That's a great question. I think one of the reasons is quite ironic, given that Mary Shelley was so devoted to her husband, Percy Bysshe Shelley, and his legacy. After Percy died, Mary Shelley really devoted herself to editing his works, bringing them to publication when they were in manuscript form. But ironically, because Percy Shelley was so famous in the 19th century and the early 20th century, and Mary Shelley was part of the reason why he was so famous, because she did so much to preserve his poetic legacy after his death, Mary Shelley came to be overshadowed by her own husband. And this continued into the late 20th century. I was recently reminded by one of my scholarly friends on Twitter that as late as 1968, Mary Shelley was referred to, I believe, in Life magazine as Mrs. P.B. Shelley, not as Mary Shelley. And so we can see as late as 1968, Mary Shelley being literally defined in terms of her relationship to Percy, not as an author in her own right, despite the fact of the kind of incredible influence of Frankenstein in particular in across media, you know, especially in film and television, but across media. Even with that incredible cultural legacy, Mary Shelley is still in the shadow of Percy in the late 20th century. That starts to turn. It started to turn in the mid-20th century with the work of Muriel Spark, who I know is an author you've covered in this series. Muriel Spark was a huge fan of The Last Man. She did the most to recover The Last Man in modern scholarship in that period because she created a summary of the book and published it at the back of her biography of Mary Shelley, which was published in 1951 originally. And through the scholarly initiatives of Muriel Spark, including this synopsis of the novel that she published in her biography, Mary Shelley started to be treated as a writer in her own right, independent of Percy. And The Last Man started to be read again. Muriel Spark was part of the creation of the first modern edition of The Last Man, but unfortunately, it didn't go to press. Only a few copies were printed, and one of those is at the Bodleian Library at Oxford. The press collapsed. It was called Falcon Press. Interestingly, they published a fair amount of plague literature, including Defoe's Journal of the Plague Year, but the press collapsed before her edition of The Last Man could be released to the public. But about 10 years later, 1965, University of Nebraska Press releases the first modern edition of the novel, which is released and is still available in libraries worldwide. And from there, we start to see major literary criticism on the novel led by Harold Bloom, a very famous Yale professor of English who was hugely influential in spreading Mary Shelley's ideas around the world in his editions. We see a resurgence of interest in Shelley, beginning with Spark, extending through Harold Bloom. And then today, I would say Mary Shelley, both Frankenstein and The Last Man are clearly canonical works. The Last Man is perhaps lagging behind a little bit in terms of popular reception, but I think that's really changed since COVID-19.
So let's wrap up with one more question. The connection between The Last Man and COVID-19 is so obvious and clear, makes a compelling case for taking a look at The Last Man right now. But Eileen, go ahead and make the case for us. Why should we read this book now in the 2020s?
The reason is rooted in the framing of the novel itself. So let's just return to these two images that begin and end the novel. The first image is of Mary Shelley herself going into the cave of the Sibylla Baiae at Naples and identifying with the figure of the prophetess and coming up with this idea for The Last Man, rooted in her own life experience. And the final image is of Vernie, her avatar, setting out to sea in search of other survivors with only his dog and the works of Homer and Shakespeare as his companions in this journey. So with those bookends for the novel, I think we can identify with Mary Shelley, especially after COVID-19. In some sense, we have to craft a prophecy of our own future. We have to come up with ways and strategies of dealing with the prospect of further epidemiological disasters or wars or climate crises that will inevitably befall us as humans over the decades and centuries to come. And Mary Shelley, I think, challenges us to prophesize our own future and to make it a hopeful future. And that's that final image we get from Lionel Verney. Even when things seem so bleak, even when it might seem as though you've lost everyone you love and everyone you care for, you can still find hope to move on and to recreate what it means to be a human being, even in the wake of total seeming disaster.
Eileen Hunt, thank you so much for joining us and telling us all about The Last Man by Mary Shelley.
Thank you very much. It was my honor to be here.
You've just listened to The Great Books Podcast, a production of National Review. Please subscribe to The Great Books Podcast and leave reviews of the show. That helps us keep this podcast going. Send me your ideas for future episodes. You can reach me through our website at heymiller.com. On Twitter, my handle is at heymiller. And last of all, special thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Great Books Podcast.